Chapter 6. Music with his head, or rounded a sentence with his hand. I was very much impressed by him even then, before I knew that he formed himself on the model of a great lord who was his client, and that he was generally called Conversation Kench. Mr. Jarndyce, he pursued, being aware of the, I would say, desolate position of our young friend, offers to place her at a first-rate establishment, where her education shall be completed, where her comfort shall be secured, where her reasonable wants shall be anticipated, where she shall be eminently qualified to discharge her duty in that station of life unto which it has pleased, shall I say, Providence, to call her. My heart was filled so full, both by what he said, and by his affecting manner of saying it, that I was not able to speak, though I tried. Mr. Jarndyce, he went on, makes no condition beyond expressing his expectation that our young friend will not at any time remove herself from the establishment in question without his knowledge and concurrence, that she will faithfully apply herself to the acquisition of those accomplishments, upon the exercise of which she will be ultimately dependent, that she will tread in the paths of virtue and honor, and so forth. I was still less able to speak than before. Now, what does our young friend say? Proceeded Mr. Kench. Take time, take time. I pause for a reply. But take time. What the destitute subject of such an offer tried to say, I need not repeat. What she did say, I could more easily tell, if it were worth the telling. What she felt, and will feel to her dying hour, I could never relate. This interview took place at Windsor, where I had passed, as far as I knew, my whole life. On that day week, amply provided with all necessaries, I left it, inside the stagecoach, for Reading. Mrs. Rachel was too good to feel any emotion at parting, but I was not so good, and wept bitterly. I thought that I ought to have known her better after so many years, and ought to have made myself enough of a favorite with her to make her sorry then. When she gave me one cold parting kiss upon my forehead, like a thaw drop from the stone porch, it was a very frosty day. I felt so miserable and self-reproachful that I clung to her and told her it was my fault. I knew that she could say goodbye so easily. No, Esther, she returned. It is your misfortune. The coach was at the little long gate. We had not come out until we heard the wheels, and thus I left her with a sorrowful heart. She went in before my boxes were lifted to the coach roof, and shut the door. As long as I could see the house, I looked back at it from the window through my tears. My godmother had left Mrs. Rachel all the little property she possessed, and there was to be a sale, and an old hearth rug with roses on it, which always seemed to me the first thing in the world I had ever seen, was hanging outside in the frost and snow. A day or two before, I had wrapped the dear old doll in her own shawl and quietly laid her, I am half ashamed to tell it, in the garden earth under the tree that shaded my old window. I had no companion left but my bird, and him I carried with me in his cage. When the house was out of sight, I sat, with my birdcage in the straw at my feet, forward on the low seat to look out of the high window, watching the frosty trees, that were like beautiful pieces of spar, and the fields all smooth and white with last night's snow, and the sun, so red but yielding so little heat, and the ice, dark like metal where the skaters and sliders had brushed the snow away. There was a gentleman in the coach who sat on the opposite seat, and looked very large in a quantity of wrappings, but he sat gazing out of the other window, and took no notice of me. I thought of my dead godmother, of the night when I read to her, of her frowning so fixedly and sternly in her bed, of the strange place I was going to, of the people I should find there, and what they would be like, and what they would say to me, when a voice in the coach gave me a terrible start. It said, "What the devil are you crying for?" I was so frightened that I lost my voice, and could only answer in a whisper, "Me, sir?" For of course I knew it must have been the gentleman in the quantity of wrappings, though he was still looking out of his window. "Yes, you," he said, turning round. "I didn't know I was crying, sir," I faltered. "But you are. said the gentleman. Look here. He came quite opposite to me from the other corner of the coach, brushed one of his large furry cuffs across my eyes but without hurting me, and showed me that it was wet. There. Now you know you are, he said. Don't you? Yes, sir, I said. And what are you crying for? Said the gentleman. Don't you want to go there? Where, sir? Where? Why, wherever you are going, said the gentleman. I am very glad to go there, sir, I answered. Well then, look glad, said the gentleman. I thought he was very strange, or at least, that what I could see of him was very strange, for he was wrapped up to the chin, and his face was almost hidden in a fur cap with broad fur straps at the side of his head fastened under his chin. But I was composed again, and not afraid of him. So I told him that I thought I must have been crying because of my godmother's death, and because of Mrs. Rachel's not being sorry to part with me. Confound Mrs. Rachel, said the gentleman. Let her fly away in a high wind on a broomstick. I began to be really afraid of him now, and looked at him with the greatest astonishment. But I thought that he had pleasant eyes, although he kept on muttering to himself in an angry manner and calling Mrs. Rachel names. After a little while he opened his outer wrapper, which appeared to me large enough to wrap up the whole coach, and put his arm down into a deep pocket in the side. Now, look here, he said. And this paper, which was nicely folded, is a piece of the best plum cake that can be got for money, sugar on the outside an inch thick, like fat on mutton chops. Here's a little pie, a gem this is, both for size and quality, made in France. And what do you suppose it's made of? Livers of fat geese. There's a pie. Now let's see you eat 'em. Thank you, sir, I replied. Thank you very much indeed. But I hope you won't be offended, they are too rich for me. Floored again, said the gentleman, which I didn't at all understand, and threw them both out of window. He did not speak to me any more until he got out of the coach a little way short of reading, when he advised me to be a good girl, and to be studious, and shook hands with me. I must say I was relieved by his departure. We left him at a milestone. I often walked past it afterwards, and never for a long time without thinking of him, and half expecting to meet him. But I never did, and so, as time went on, he passed out of my mind. When the coach stopped, a very neat lady looked up at the window and said, Miss Donny. No, ma'am, Esther Summerson. That is quite right, said the lady, Miss Donny. I now understood that she introduced herself by that name, and begged Miss Donny's pardon for my mistake, and pointed out my boxes at her request. Under the direction of a very neat maid, they were put outside a very small green carriage, and then Miss Donny, the maid, and I got inside, and were driven away. Everything is ready for you, Esther, said Miss Donny, and the scheme of your pursuits has been arranged in exact accordance with the wishes of your guardian, Mr. Jarndyce. Of, did you say, ma'am? Of your guardian, Mr. Jarndyce, said Miss Donny. I was so bewildered that Miss Donny thought the cold had been too severe for me, and lent me her smelling bottle. Do you know my guardian, Mr. Jarndyce, ma'am? I asked after a good deal of hesitation. Not personally, Esther, said Miss Donny, merely through his solicitors, Messrs. Kenge and Carboy, of London. A very superior gentleman, Mr. Kenge. Truly eloquent indeed. Some of his periods quite majestic. I felt this to be very true, but was too confused to attend to it. Our speedy arrival at our destination, before I had time to recover myself, increased my confusion, and I never shall forget the uncertain and the unreal air of everything at Greenleaf, Miss Donny's house, that afternoon. But I soon became used to it. I was so adapted to the routine of Greenleaf before long that I seemed to have been there a great while and almost to have dreamed, rather than really lived my old life at my godmother's. Nothing could be more precise, exact, and orderly than Greenleaf. There was a time for everything all around the dial of the clock, and everything was done at its appointed moment. We were 12 boarders, and there were 2 Miss Donnies, twins. It was understood that I would have to depend, by and by, on my qualifications as a governess, and I was not only instructed in everything that was taught at Greenleaf, but was very soon engaged in helping to instruct others. Although I was treated in every other respect like the rest of the school, this single difference was made in my case from the first. As I began to know more, I taught more, and so in course of time I had plenty to do, which I was very fond of doing, because it made the dear girls fond of me. At last, whenever a new pupil came who was a little downcast and unhappy, she was so sure indeed I don't know why to make a friend of me that all newcomers were confided to my care. They said I was so gentle, but I am sure they were. I often thought of the resolution I had made on my birthday, to try to be industrious, contented, and true-hearted, and to do some good to someone, and win some love if I could. And indeed, I felt almost ashamed to have done so little, and have won so much. I passed at Greenleaf 6 happy, quiet years. I never saw in any face there, thank heaven, on my birthday, that it would have been better if I had never been born. When the day came round, it brought me so many tokens of affectionate remembrance that my room was beautiful with them from New Year's Day to Christmas. In those 6 years I had never been away except on visits at holiday time in the neighborhood. After the first 6 months or so I had taken Miss Donnie's advice in reference to the propriety of writing to Mr. Kench to say that I was happy and grateful, and with her approval I had written such a letter. I had received a formal answer acknowledging its receipt and saying, "We note the contents thereof, which shall be duly communicated to our client." After that I sometimes heard Miss Donnie and her sister mention how regular my accounts were paid, and about twice a year I ventured to write a similar letter. I always received by return of post exactly the same answer in the same round hand, with the signature of Kench and Carboy in another writing, which I supposed to be Mr. Kench's. It seemed so curious to me to be obliged to write all this about myself, as if this narrative were the narrative of my life. But my little body will soon fall into the background now. 6 quiet years, I find I am saying it for the second time, I had passed at Greenleaf, seeing in those around me, as it might be in a looking glass, every stage of my own growth and change there, when, one November morning, I received this letter. I omit the date. Old Square, Lincoln's Inn, Madam Jarndyce, and Jarndyce, RCLT, Mr. Jarndyce being at too recent to his house, under an order of the CT of Chai, a ward of the CT in this cause, for whom he wishes to secure an eligible common, directs us to inform you that he will be glad of your services, in the asked capacity. We have earned for your being forwarded, carriage free, PR 8 o'clock coach from Reading, on Monday morning next, to White Horse Cellar, Piccadilly, London, where one of our CLKS will be in waiting, to convey you to our off as above. We are, Madam, your abbot serves, Kench, and Carboy, Miss Esther Summerson. Oh, never, never, never shall I forget the emotion this letter caused in the house. It was so tender in them to care so much for me, it was so gracious in that father who had not forgotten me to have made my orphan way so smooth and easy, and to have inclined so many youthful natures towards me, that I could hardly bear it. Not that I would have had them less sorry, I am afraid not, but the pleasure of it, and the pain of it, and the pride and joy of it, and the humble regret of it were so blended, that my heart seemed almost breaking, while it was full of rapture. The letter gave me only 5 days' notice of my removal. When every minute added to the proofs of love and kindness that were given me in those 5 days, and when at last the morning came, and when they took me through all the rooms, that I might see them for the last time, and when some cried, "Esther, dear, say goodbye to me here at my bedside, where you first spoke so kindly to me," and when others ask me, only to write their names, with Esther's love, and when they all surrounded me with their parting presence, and clung to me weeping and cried, what shall we do when dear Esther's gone? And when I tried to tell them how forbearing, and how good they had all been to me, and how I blessed and thanked them every one, what a heart I had. And when the two Miss Donnies grieved as much to part with me as the least among them, and when the maid said, bless you, miss, wherever you go. And when the ugly lame old gardener, who I thought had hardly noticed me in all those years, came panting after the coach, to give me a little nosegay of geraniums, and told me I had been the light of his eyes, indeed the old man said so. What a heart I had then! And could I help it, if with all this, and the coming to the little Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.